This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hi there, and welcome to The Inevitable. This is our new podcast where we're talking about the future of the car. This means everything from electrified vehicles to cars that drive themselves. Where are we going and how will we get there? I'm Johnny Lieberman from Motor Trend, joined by
Ed Lowe, and we are going to talk to some amazing guests. We have Reggie Watts, we have Sung Kang, we have James Marsden, we have Spike Ferriston, Kristen Lee, Derek Jenkins, a whole bunch of actors, celebrities, car crazy folks, people from in and outside the industry. It's going to be great, and you can find it on podcastone.com or anywhere you find you listen to your favorite podcast. We're also doing a video series as well. That's on motortrend.com/theinevitable or on youtube.com/motortrend. Come join us.
Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. We've got a fun show. Definitely going to be talking about that Bronco Raptor and Cadillac Escalade V-Series, Hyundai Ioniq 5, and a lot more. Before we get started, a word from our friends at Geico.
Hey Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the Motorator DeAndre, here with Bill Goldberg. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. As you can tell, it's a fluctuation of temperature in and out.
A little bit of a chilly morning.
Man, unbelievable. It's colder here than it was in New York yesterday.
Yeah, you had a quick trip over there doing some work, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if that was work or...
Yeah, I guess it was kind of a test run. My post-COVID body could handle the travel in 24-hour period of time. But yeah, it was a little 2K work-related. So yeah.
Yeah, right on. Welcome back, Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com. Back to the show. How are you, Alistair?
I'm good, thanks, Matt. All is well. Slightly warmer in California.
Slightly warmer in California. I did a quick trip to Arizona to do the kickoff ceremonies for Barrett Jackson, and then came back here to get some work done, and then heading out tomorrow morning. We're in the studio Wednesday, heading out tomorrow morning for more of the auction stuff. But just doing some Bravago stuff. Of course, Craig had a kind of a VIP launch party at his private collection, which I haven't been to before. At not his house, which you've seen in magazines, but he's got another little warehouse where he's stacked up a bunch of his cars. It's a gorgeous place.
Is it really considered little?
I think maybe to Barrett Jackson standards, I mean, maybe the building was 6,000 square feet, something like that, and had, you know, some offices, and maybe it's, yeah, maybe six or, yeah, maybe about that size. So I would say probably little. I can't see for sure, but a little birdie told me he might be building himself like a nicer, larger, like family facility. Like the family business is separate from the Barrett Jackson business. So he might be coming after you with the super garage, Bill. He might be coming after you to compete with the super garage.
Yeah, he'll leave me in the dust quite quickly. But it's always interesting to hear what Craig's up to.
But it was great to catch up with Craig and Carolyn Jackson. They're always so fantastic. This is the 50th anniversary event for them, for Barrett Jackson. So we went to their gala event. It's just a huge party, 6,000 people. It's a lot of fun, and So yeah, I'm going to be heading back out there, meeting with a bunch of people and you know, friends of ours and vendors that we are working with, all the stuff that you and I had talked about. But before we dig
do
into...
Do not forget to go by the Badass Cabinets, guys. So do I, not forget.
Okay,
man,
I went...
That stuff is so cool.
I went by there. After the gala, I went by there and walked around the vendor booth areas, which were... they weren't working, but the vendors, you know, the booths were open. And I saw some of the stuff. I didn't want to, like, touch it and mess around with it because obviously somebody wasn't there, and I don't want to be that guy. But yeah, cool stuff. So I'm going to swing by there and talk to them. And the sign guy, the sign guy that I showed you, that guy is very cool. He wants to do something. And at a couple of
I didn't see him. I didn't see that. Resend me that one, please.
Yeah, I sent you the you know, the big nice metal stainless like Red Eye and Demon.
Okay,
those things. Yeah, he's got a Hellcat one, a Red Eye Hellcat one, and a Demon one. I think maybe like the Red Eye Hellcat and the Demon one are kind of the cool ones, but some pretty cool stuff. And he had some Shelby ones. So I want to swing by a few more of those, and I'll send you guys. I'll post all pictures up of all the stuff that I'm talking about. So you can see all the cool stuff that's there. That's not just the cars. Of course, there's cars, but which I posted some.
And by the way, personally, do not send me any photos of any vehicle during your trip, Barrett Jackson. Please, dear God, please don't do that.
Or after it sells, I'll be like, hey, Bill, look at this car. Just went for so and so cost. You know,
that's fine.
That's fine, right? Because then you can't be like,
then I'm not near a phone.
Or head over. Hey, could you head over to the office and get a paddle? Because it's
complete out of sight, out of mind. I don't even need a freaking paddle. Unfortunately, I mean, at this point, like, okay, what do you want?
Yeah.
So out of mind, I don't want to be anywhere near it. That's why I'm not attending. Let me finish this garage. Let me put the cars that I've purchased from Barrett Jackson in the garage.
And then we'll go to Barrett Jackson, Houston.
Bingo.
We'll go to Barrett Jackson, Houston, which is going to come up later in the year before SEMA. So then maybe we'll talk more. But real quick before we get into this, all the good stuff with Alistair, but how about Dave Salvaggio's new car? It's all over Instagram. He delivered the new vehicle to Kevin Hart. Judging by the photos, it looks like they took delivery at Bruce Meyer's garage out here. Bruce Meyer from the Peterson Museum out here at his place in Beverly Hills. I don't know too much about the car. Do you know much about it?
I don't know much about it other than it's a badass retro Roadrunner. You know, it's pretty damn cool. It falls in line with what he's done before, but I'm sure he's got some extra goodies on there that we don't know about yet, but we ought to have him on the show to talk about.
Yeah, we're going to have to get him on. Now that it's out, now the cat's out of the bag, I think we could get into that a little bit more with him. But cool car. Want to get into some of the details on it. It's
I want to know what we can't see right now. That's what I want.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is now they're going to start to basically release the details of it. But what he built was a 69 Plymouth Roadrunner. And if you guys want to start seeing some of this, I think if you follow Kevin Hart on Instagram, but definitely follow Salvaggio _ design. Salvaggio design. If you follow that, you can start to see because he's posting more photos of it, and it's anyway, it's cool stuff. So, So I guess there's all the buzz this past week. Alistair is a Bronco Raptor.
Yeah, it's quite a thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we knew it was coming, but it's always interesting to see, you know, what they're doing with it. And it's funny, is it like projected 400 horsepower plus, and we're just banding these numbers around as if, yeah, well, you know, you'd expect to have 400 horsepower, but that's a hell of a lot in a
toy
like this.
Huh? What's it weigh?
Oh, they're pretty. I don't know because we haven't got the hands on yet, but it'll be a lot.
I mean,
not a lot relative to a TRX or something like that, but it's you know, it's a pretty heavy piece of kit before the off road hardware.
Well,
the other thing, sorry,
I was going to say the Explorer, the Ford Explorer ST that has the 3-liter 400 horsepower That thing scoots around pretty good, and that's, you know, heavy as well. So putting that engine in the Bronco, I'm sure is going to be good. And by the way, the tuning packages that are already out for these, because what's the Bronco normally? 325 horsepower? What's the Bronco?
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. The standard car has so you're only talking about another 70 horsepower or something. So they had to push it that far. And as you say, it is the engine from the Explorer XT. So, you know, there'll be plenty of tuning options and everything else available pretty quickly.
So Hennessy has their Bronco Velociraptor 400, which is upgraded intercooling because they're turbo engines already. And they had it at I saw it at Barrett Jackson during the setup day, right? So I got to walk around it without any people and just kind of see it. And he puts the big tires on. He makes basically making his version of a Raptor without having to buy the Raptor, right? So you can send any Bronco there and get this package. And with his tune, and it's probably like tune and exhaust and upgraded cooling on the intercoolers, you know, for the turbo, he's getting 400 horsepower. And if you go to his website or whatever and you check out the videos, he drag races his against a Raptor, or against the stock Bronco. And so 400 horsepower does move that thing around pretty good.
The only thing that struck me about it, you know, just looking through the specs and everything else, is just how wide this thing is.
Yeah.
And I do, that would be the only, I get it. I mean, in the desert, it's not going to matter. But if you're going sort of rock crawling or something like that, you know, this is another 8 inches wider than the sort of standard Bronco. So it's a pretty hefty beast. So that might be the only thing that becomes a bit of an issue off road, because it's not the length, it's the width that's the
yeah. So this is kind of came up with some, you know, some Q&A with Ford going, hey, Bronco Raptor, it's bigger, it's wider, it's taller, and it's only available in the four-door. And they were asked why, and Ford was saying, yeah, you know you can do rock crawling and stuff with it, of course you can do that, but the theme of Raptor has been a little bit more on the high speed kind of off-roading adventures that you would go on. So you can get a regular Bronco two-door short wheelbase, you know, more narrow, and of course an entire catalog of aftermarket Ford performance products, and make that thing to a really cool rock crawler. But they were saying, we wanted the longer wheelbase for more high speed stability. So they kind of wanted to go after the quicker version of the off-roadness of it. So I don't necessarily disagree. I think it's fine being the wide.
And I think they're going to do I think Matt, they're also going to do a more hardcore off-road Bronco as well. I think they're going to take it in two directions. They're going to take it in the performance desert racer thing, which is the Raptor, and then they'll probably do something else as well, which will be more off-road focused. So off-road rock crawl.
Like rock crawl, like slow speed off-road. Yeah, which would definitely make sense. They've built this brand around Bronco, not just with Bronco Sport and the full-size Bronco and two-door, four-door, and all the variations. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we're going to start to see Ford saying to their dealers, hey, build us a Bronco showroom on your dealer, you know, and then also the Mustang showroom, because we've got Mach-E and all the other Mustangs and the high performance variants, like, and start to build those brands out under the Ford umbrella. I'm sure out here we could just swing by Galpin and see what they're going to do, because they're usually the first to do a lot of this stuff. But it looks cool. I mean, what else do we know about it? Is there anything that stands out? Have you guys driven it yet or walked around? And, you know, what's your thoughts on it?
No, we haven't driven it yet, but you're right about the sort of positioning. It is more like a kind of ST Ford Performance type approach. So you've got a sports exhaust, which will be switchable from, I think, Baja mode will probably be the most fruity, Fox shocks. I mean, it's a pretty impressive spec, and I think, you know, they've now got, with the Raptor name, they've got a reputation to upkeep. So, you know, I think it's going to be a big thing. And they've also, of course, announced that there will be a R version of the Raptor, of the Raptor truck, which will have the V8, we expect. So, you know, there's some pretty cool things coming from the Raptor name. You're talking about Bronco being a sub-brand, but, you know, increasingly Raptor's a sub-brand for kind of off-roady power as well.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I was walking around, Barrett Jackson, talking to a bunch of people, and they're like, hey, how's it going on the podcast? What's going on in the car world? You get a lot of those questions. What's going on in the car world? What's going on in the car world? And I said, it's good and exciting and it's fun, but it's also incredibly frustrating because everything we're talking about, we're like, hey, you're going to be able to get this 3 years from now. And that's the frustrating part is all this stuff that's getting announced is so far out. I think maybe this Bronco Raptor is going to come out a little bit sooner than a lot of other things that have been discussed in the past few months. But it's the wait time on so many of these things. It's nuts that we're talking about cars 3 years in advance, and we don't have much else.
You're right. I mean, we've been trying to buy a couple of cars to support our long-term fleet. We managed to buy a Mach-E over the weekend, mm-hmm. And we had to pay a couple of grand over. I know you love this, Matt. We had to pay a couple of grand over the odds, and we only got that because somebody canceled our order. There was some last-minute thing, and a dealer rang us up and said, do you want it? And it's white. And we're like, white cars never photograph well.
Yeah.
But we literally couldn't buy one. We couldn't buy one without paying massively over the odds and just not willing to do that, especially as we're going to give them loads of publicity. So, yeah, it's been a, you know,
someone took you to school, buddy. Someone took you to school on that deal. At least you could wrap it so it doesn't have to be white. You can do whatever you want. Wrap it with Edmunds logos. So at least you're promoting yourself for that extra fee and not so much, just the dealer or whatever.
Yeah. Would you like me to pay you a premium to promote you? Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Just kind of grade a little bit after a while.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you millions of dollars worth of exposure and I'm going to pay you for the premium.
You're going to make me pay for it.
Yeah, you're going to pay the premium on top of it. So what are your thoughts on both Ford with the Lightning and now Chevrolet, GM, with the Z06 saying, you know, hey, dealers, we don't control you. Do whatever you want. But we strongly suggest you don't take your customers, you know, to the mat
cleaners.
With this thing and saying, hey, you know, it's not just the markup, but it's also the shady practices that get attention going, hey, I know you got your $100 deposit down on the vehicle that you bought, you know, through Ford or GM or whatever. But now if you really want to keep that deposit, you got to pay the dealer $5,000, which is
kiss my ass.
Yeah.
What?
And whatever they mean by that, is it refundable? Is it not refundable? Does it go to the purchase price of the car? Is it the markup that you're not going to get back? Like, there's some shady shit going on. And because it's so inconsistent from dealer to dealer, that's what drives everyone mad. And that's what drives the manufacturers mad. So, you know, Ford stepped up a week or two ago and said, you know, dealers, don't charge a markup or any of these reservation fees for the new Lightning, but we're going to ask the customers to not sell it for 12 months. And then the idea would be in 12 months from now, when that customer maybe would want to sell it, there's enough F-150 Lightnings being produced that it's not going to demand a massive, you know, upcharge on bring a trailer. You could get one used at a fair price, or you can just order another one new at a fair price. That's kind of the thought. With Z06...
Sorry, Matt. I didn't mean to cut you off. I mean, that's kind of been the situation in Europe, because in Europe, the whole law is different. So the dealer can only charge MSRP.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is you then get the consumer flipping it. So basically, like getting like an early run GT3 or GT3 RS or something like that, GT2, was basically like winning the lottery. So then the dealers were being encouraged to really control, and this is particularly true of Ferrari, really control who got the vehicles. So then they're tying customers, a bit like they did with the Ford GT as well, tying customers into not selling it too quickly. Or basically, if you're a Ferrari collector, it's like, well, maybe you cash in on your, you know, Challenge Stradale once. But after that, you're off the list and back, you know, down to the back of the queue and on the naughty step for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So
right.
It was a kind of like that was the flip side. Then the dealer's pissed because the dealer's been said, well, I've got to sell it for 70,000, and this guy I've just sold it to has now flipped it for 200. So there is no, I mean, it's classic market forces, but there's no easy win here. And I think, you know, the way that they're going about it seems to be sensible, but it is a it's a kind of strong arm tactic, isn't it? You know, it's a little bit of push pull with carrot and stick, if I can mix my metaphors anymore.
Right, and I don't know all the rules in Europe, but at the I would imagine that if somebody said, "All right, great, I'm on the list. I bought a car for $70,000. It's worth $170,000." That you know, yeah, you could sell it. The customer can sell it and make that money. You know, you'd think they'd want to keep it. Like you said, you're sort of qualifying the customer to see if they want to keep it. But the dealer is trying to get ahead of it instead of going to the customer and going, hey, if you're going to sell it, bring it back to us. Let us handle it on consignment, and then we'll make some money on that deal after the fact, right? But gouging everyone up front seems like the unfair move, right? Especially when we get into because that gouging becomes so commonplace. And I know I keep joking about Kia Telluride as the example, but it's not a limited production vehicle. There's nothing very special there. It's a cool vehicle and I get it, but why pay $10,000 over a Kia Telluride? Because this is becoming too easy for dealers to do it. You know, so there needs to be a little...
I guess the counter argument, Matt, is as we all know from the jobs that we do, is you know you're worth what somebody's willing to pay, right? So it is classic market forces that if there's enough demand for a Telluride and people are willing to pay $10,000 over sticker, then you know it's a free market and all that.
Great. So everybody listening, don't pay it. Everybody listening, don't pay it. If everybody pays it, you're gonna get screwed. If you don't pay it, they'll have to come down on the price, but. Anyway, Z06, maybe I like what GM is doing and saying, hey, we're going to pick maybe who can get these cars. And it is maybe a little bit more limited production and a little bit more special than, you know, a Telluride. But the idea of all day long, any one of us who like cars and, you know, understand the value of cars in the future would say, sure, you want me to sign a year or even longer to not sell a new Z06, happy to do it. I'm happy to do it, right? And if you sell it to me at a fair price, you sell it to me at sticker, you know? Yeah, well, hold
on. I think
on
the other thing that would be nice is, the other thing that would be nice on this stuff, if they said, you have to keep it for a year and you have to do 5,000 miles, so you don't just put it in an air-conditioned barn. I'd love that because, you know, it's like these Ferraris that go off to Dubai or wherever they go and you never see them again.
Yeah.
It'd be like, you must drive it on the public road for 5,000 miles.
Actually, I
don't know about that.
I mean, I don't hate the idea.
Why?
I don't hate the idea. The reason why, Bill, is because if everybody follows that rule, then every one of them that's used has 5,000 miles on it. So
I get it, but right? It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. It would be so difficult to enforce that rule. And how would you do
There's
it?
There's no way.
No, and then I don't know. Then everyone would be John Cena and. For John Cena.
Yeah. No, I'm good.
But I agree, you know, drive it. But our conversation last week about the SAC Mustang that I got, we talked about should I drive it a few miles, should I not drive it a few miles. Thanks to everybody on social media that commented and said nice things about the car. Very varying opinions about it. A lot of people say, hey, you know, drive it here and there, a few events, 400 miles is not going to kill you. Some people say, maybe don't drive it, but I appreciate all the opinions. And I certainly appreciate everyone's thoughts on the dry ice blasting. And got a couple of really good referrals, and I'm going to reach out to those companies and have a discussion about how to do it. And I would very much like to at least shoot some photos, maybe a little bit of video, nothing fancy, just on the phone, and post that and say, you know, this is what the car looks underneath, and this is what we talked about how to do it, and this is what we did after it's done and what it looks like, and show you guys some of that dry ice blasting process. I don't know if you've even seen this yet, Alistair, but this dry ice wash or dry ice blasting or whatever you want to call it is sort of a mild way of cleaning a car that's not as abrasive, it's happening more in the restoration world, I guess, and other things. So it's just a thought on how to clean sort of just the whole undercarriage or engine or everything on a car. And then, yeah, so
I'm very excited about looking into it.
I'd be interested to see how you get on, Matt, because my car as well could maybe use something like that. It's kind of interesting what you're saying about putting miles on it as a car. I mean, we've seen so much appreciation in the classic car market. I mean, my car's gone up in value, and then you get into this sort of psychology. Even though I've got 62,000 miles on it, you're like, well, if I go and do another 5,000 miles, then I'm actually costing me a load of money potentially. And it's not good. It's not a good mentality to have, because then you don't enjoy. The car becomes a museum piece. It doesn't become a car, and you unless you've got tons of money, you're sort of, it starts to screw with your brain a little bit.
Yeah. So I subscribe to both of those mentalities, if that's even physically possible. But I'm saying, for somebody who wants to buy the car and capsule it and not put the miles on it, by all means, do that if you want to do that. And if somebody wants to put some miles on it, then by all means, do that. And the trade-off is the guy with no miles is going to have the more valuable car, and the guy with miles is going to potentially get to drive it and have some fun with it. But maybe there's a happy medium of the both, but I'm down with it. And certainly if you have the means to do it a couple of times, then it's a little less of an issue. You can get a car and store it, and then you can get something else and not store it, but if you're but if you're on a more limited budget, like I got this car is not a lot of money, but it's definitely a big purchase for me. Sean in our shop, he had a customer, a client of his long ago, that he did a lot of work on the guy's GMC Cyclone. And then he knew the guy put it away and stored it for a while. It was covered in dust, and the tires are flat spotted. It's got a few miles on it, but not a ton. It's like 16 or 20,000 miles, right? So in the world of Cyclones, that's a really, really nice piece to get. And, again, it's not super expensive, but they're starting to go up in value. He really likes these things, and he's saying maybe this is the opportunity. He was thinking exactly what I was thinking when I got the SAC Mustang. He's like, maybe now is the opportunity to try to make it happen. And he went and he bought it, and he loves it, and he put tires on it. And I don't know how many miles he's going to put on it, but it's not so few miles that he can never drive it, but it's not too many miles that it's not worth something. He kind of got it like right in that sweet spot, that if he put 2,000 miles on it over a couple of years, it's not really going to move the needle much, because I think he's somewhere in that 15,000 mile range anyway, right? It's probably not going to make much difference between 15 and 17. 15 and 30 would maybe make a difference, but that's about it. So anyway, his thought is maybe have a little fun with that, but not too much. not 15,000 miles of fun, maybe 3,000 miles of fun. It's just a thought. One of the other things that came up recently was Cadillac Escalade V Series. Now, I'm down with the CT4. I'm down with the CT5 V Blackwing. I love that thing is turbo gas powered, available with a manual transmission. Just the last hurrah we're going to get out of a super sedan with an actual ICE engine in it. Saw it at Barrett-Jackson. Looks cool. It's badass. But Cadillac says, well, maybe we need an Escalade V Series. I don't know much about it, Alistair. I think there was a little bit of an issue with how they were going to roll this car out. There was supposed to be a big fanfare and event. We were going to be involved here at CarCast. And then I just think some new COVID rules that everyone's got in place and some fear of that just changed it. So it ended up being a press release as opposed to something like a live event. I think it has the CT5 Blackwing engine in it. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think GM's been a bit. I think our understanding, should we put it that way, is that it would have that engine, which is also in the ZL1 Camaro, if I remember correctly. So you're talking basically 670 horsepower, 660 roughly pounds feet of torque. Well, that's what's in the CT5. So maybe it'll have a retune or something. But I don't know. It's complete nonsense, of course. But it's no more nonsense than a Tesla Model X Plaid or something like that.
And yeah.
it's the kind of last hurrah, isn't it? You get the impression that everybody's developed a sense of humor because they've got like 5 years to go. So let's just
do the most
building these engines in.
Possible. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate like Kardashian tool, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
right?
If you live in Calabasas, then you're going to have this blacked out, black with black. I mean, it's blacked out already. So black grill.
Right. Yeah. Have all.
I like it. It's fun.
I kind of like it too, but you're right. It's like, I'm not sure if it's much more than, you know, like, yeah, just kind of the Beverly Hills hot rod that it'll never see the drag. I mean, don't get me wrong. Hennessy will drag race it and make it faster for some reason. Maybe he'll sell a few of them as well because he's, you know, he's doing that stuff. And, you know, listen, we love him for it. But yeah, so the Escalade's big. Why not? You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess they don't really do sort of a small wheelbase, lighter version. You know, not an 18 row bus size version of it. You know,
no. I mean, if your base engine is a 6.2 liter V8, whacking a supercharger on it probably isn't such a big deal. And if you can afford one of those, then you can afford gas even at $5 a gallon, which is what I paid on Sunday, which kind of blew my mind a bit.
Yeah. And I kind of get GM's thought going, hey, we've got this hot engine now. Let's either reduce our cost or make some money on this thing by dropping it in as many things as we possibly can and increase our profit margin. There's a business case for it. That part I understand. But
yeah, and it gets a bunch of publicity for the Escalade, which is now, you know, a year or two old, so it helps that way as well.
It does, and, you know, Cadillac's made a pretty decent name for themselves as being, you know, from the stagnant old man brand to a bit of a performance brand, a domestic performance brand. The V-Series vehicles have always been fun. Look at the CTS-V wagon with a 6-speed manual on bringing trailer these days. Like, that's money, man. If you guys had one of those back in the day and you're selling them now and it's still a cool piece, people love them and it's fun. But that's a cool car to have, you know, the wagon with the 6-speed, you know, I would argue, look, I'm sure the CT5 is fast as hell with the automatic transmission, but yeah, to your point of collectability, if you want that thing to be worth some money in 5 years, get the manual transmission.
Definitely.
Do you know who's going to buy the Escalade? I think it's going to be bought by like a lot of racing drivers who tow their own vehicles.
Yeah. I could see that.
Because if you're rolling into the paddock and you need something this scale and size to tow your boat, your power boat or your race car or something, and you're doing it yourself, and a lot of people just enjoy doing it themselves.
Yeah.
Then this would be a cool thing to turn up in the paddock in.
Yeah, it would be. And you know, it'd be beautiful inside and comfortable and it'd be great. So I can see that. What's going on? What's going on in your world?
You know, the thing that excited me over the weekend that I know it never catches on in the US, but I was watching the Monte Carlo rally and there's a guy called Sebastian Loeb, which hopefully people listening to this will know. And I went on the Acropolis rally when, I don't know, I was like 22 and starting out in this world, and I think he's about 3 years older than I am. And he was this really young Frenchman. Carlos Sainz and Colin McRae were driving for Citroën in the World Rally Championship. And they were both on like multi-million dollar contracts and these superheroes. And this little French guy who barely spoke any English at that time turned up and was just mighty. And they couldn't get over how fast this kid was. And here we are like 20-something years on. He's 48 next month. He just finished second in the Dakar. He could fly straight from the Dakar to a test of a brand new rally car, which was a Puma, which is Ford's little SUV in Europe. It's a Puma hybrid. He turns up in the north of England to test this thing, turns up in Monte Carlo, takes on Sebastien Ogier, who I think is an 8-time world champion, Loeb's a 9-time world champion, and at 48 years old beats him. Mm-hmm. Ogier did get the two of them who've got 8 and 9 world championships between each. Then they were taking on all the young guns and were just in a different league. And it was a bit like the Verstappen-Hamilton in Formula One. The two of them just kind of took each other to another level. And it was just an incredible story. And what made it even better is Seb's now won 79 world rallies. He also finished second at Le Mans for Peugeot in a prototype, all sorts of stuff. He's won in Extreme E, all sorts of things. He turns up, His normal co-driver isn't co-driving for anymore. So he turned up with a 50-year-old lady who had been, he had done some testing with him over the years. She's a part-time maths teacher.
Yeah, I was going to say she's a
and
teacher.
This was her. Yeah, this is a teacher. She's 50 years old. He's 47, nearly 48. They get in the car. They dust everybody. They win the Monte Carlo rally. And it's just such an amazing story. And if you look, there's so much onboard footage from, you know, if you go across Twitter or any social media. And it's, I know rallying doesn't really do it over here in the same way. I know Ken Block came over and made a bit of buzz around it. But it's just extraordinary to see. And this guy must be right up there. When you talk about the best rally drivers, actually the best drivers. I mean, he was mighty at Le Mans. He's been mighty in everything he's done. Finish second on the Dakar, fly to the UK, fly to France, win the Monte Carlo rally, go home. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, it was an exciting weekend. I saw all the news and the buzz around it, certainly through Ford and the brands and the sponsors that were pushing it. But yeah, I saw some of the in-car footage, and it always just blows my mind when you see some of that in-car rally stuff, and you see this guy just hauling ass, sawing out the wheel, and someone's just sitting there reading a book. Next to him going, yeah, you're going to turn here, you're going to turn there. They never even look up and see what's going on. I stare at my phone when someone's driving a car for a few minutes, and I start to get sick in the back, you know, looking at my phone. I can't imagine driving like bat out of hell and just reading a map the whole time and talking to somebody on my headset going, yeah, you're going to turn up here, you're going to turn up there. And then some of the clips, some of the carnage you see that they were showing just – you know, someone goes, they make it, they're flying through the air, they hit the dirt, they go straight. Somebody just misses and they lawn dart off the side. And then they always cut to the in-car footage. You hear the guy going, oh, shit. And he's just flying through the air. And you're like, my gosh.
There was a mighty crash with one of the Pumas over the weekend. I think that's also on social where he literally just powered off down a ravine.
I saw that.
I've been
yeah.
on those Monte Carlo rally roads. It's like, you know, it's like going up the canyons near LA. A lot of the time there are no barriers, or even if there are barriers, you go over the top. And then this thing cartwheeled down the cliff. And yeah, and then the next thing you see is kind of this guy going out backside first. And you're either okay or you're not, right?
Yeah.
And I did a rally many years ago, and there's a British co-driver in the 14 got killed a few rallies later. Oof. And, you know, the tree where you hit a tree. And, you know, it's still it's amazing what they walk away from, but it's still a dangerous sport. But yeah, I mean, extraordinary skill, incredible stuff.
Yeah, it's the whole thing is kind of nuts, but it was kind of exciting to see. And congratulations to them for winning. Does the lady go back to teaching at this point, or she gets some kind of bonus? Maybe
I heard that she was basically back in the classroom on Monday.
Yeah,
and what I like about actually both, but certainly about Sebastian is he looks 48. You know you get these like Bill, obviously, who don't look.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. And the guy looks 48. Look at the pictures of him. You know, he's got this kind of like weather beaten face. He looks a bit sort of. But he was like a champion gymnast in his teens. So his signature is doing a backflip, like a standing backflip on the podium. He was still able to do that at 48 as well. So he's like I don't really like hero worship people, but he's pretty much up there in terms of.
Yeah.
You know, just in terms of his skill set, it's amazing.
Yeah. By the way, I like that shirt you got on there, Bill.
I knew you were going to say that. Bravado.
Big man's wearing his Bravado shirt. Make sure we get some screenshots of that at some point.
Is this an alcoholic beverage that you might have something to do with?
Yeah, might be. Tell us a little bit. I guess we got to get into the EV part of the discussion at some point. So why don't we just touch on that for a minute? Tell us a little bit about the Hyundai, because you guys got your hands on is the Ioniq 5?
The Ioniq 5, which looks like something out of the 80s. It's all sort of it's a cool looking car, sister car to the Kia EV6. Yeah, we've been really impressed with it. It starts, the car we had was like a fully loaded dual motor all-wheel drive thing, which was like 56 grand. But actually, that's not really, I think, where the sweet spot is. The sweet spot is around like 45,000. So basically, what you're getting for the price of a standard range plus model, Tesla Model 3, is actually, it's sort of one of those things that's kind of SUV-like. So it's a little bit bigger, a little bit boxier, but it's a cool, it looks cool, it drives well, it's got a lot going for it. The only thing it doesn't have that the Teslas have is the whole charging infrastructure thing, but, you know, that's improving all the time. And Yeah, I like the fact that Hyundai's come into the market and said, well, we've got an opportunity to do something that looks a little bit different, and you know, let's try and create some buzz around it. And I think they've done a great job.
Yeah, it definitely has an interesting look to it. The interior, you'll have to tell me. I get we get to do things on the interior with EVs that we can't do with conventional cars, mostly because of the big tunnel where the transmission and stuff is. So we've got, you know, more flat floors, and you can, you know, pass throughs and, you know, left and right. So you don't have to sit in a bucket. You can kind of spread out a little bit. You know, we made some comments about things like the VW, whatever the ID4 it is. And I was like, it's just too gamerish kind of on the inside for me. Certainly the press car that they passed around that had the white interior, the white steering wheel. you know, it's like, I get it. It probably looks cool in photos on the LA Auto Show floor. But in real life, it's probably not the configuration you'd get. But the Hyundai has this kind of this massive screen kind of dash thing going on. I don't know how to explain it. It looks like a screen where the gauge cluster would be, but then it keeps going for a little bit. So instead of a massive iPad stuck on the, you know, on the center console, it kind of just goes across the length of, you know, half the car, right?
Yeah. It's sort of how you display the information, and instead of having a, you know, one sort of iPad-like thing, they basically made a narrower screen that runs further along the car. And yeah, there's all this thing about not having a centered, you know, transmission tunnel. I think one of our guys was saying it's okay, but then anything that's in the passenger footwell ends up rolling into the driver's feet and stuff like that. So there's a few curiosities about it, but I think it's good. I mean, Hyundai's gone one way, Kia's gone another way. Their car also looks pretty cool, but is a very different approach. And, you know, things are heating up, and actually we need more cars around that kind of entry level EV price, around the $40,000. It's still a lot of money, but you know, the Tesla Model 3's kind of had that market to itself for a long time. And it's great that there's getting more and more choice at a more sensible end of the market.
And what was the range on that Hyundai?
We just tested it, Matt. And let me do a quick Google. I can't remember off the top of your head what it came out at.
Yeah.
It was, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 came in 20th in the Edmunds range test rankings. So EPA was 256 miles. We managed 270. So that's basically right alongside a Mustang Mach-E standard range. A little bit more than a Tesla Model Y performance. Our range leader at the moment is a EQS 450 Plus at 422 miles, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But I mean, everything's kind of normalizing now between sort of 250 to 300. That seems to be kind of where things are, you know, where things are landing.
We're going to make the jump soon. We're going to make the jump. You know, the EQS or whatever the Mercedes we're talking about, not just an exercise in EV technology, but aerodynamics and some other things. I was at a SEMA conference, and there was a big like EV fest that Holley does, and guys are out there, you know, drag racing, you know, Teslas and stuff for fun. But there's not a lot of performance tuning, which is really what I got into with these guys. Is go, how do we start doing performance tuning? And they're like, we can't really yet. Nobody's really cracked the code in the aftermarket for the performance tuning. So they're focusing on lighter weight and aerodynamics. And somebody showed up with a Tesla Plaid, which runs, I don't know, 920s or 930s. And this guy was like, he just gutted the entire interior, audio system, seats, everything down to bare metal, and just ran a driver's seat in it and ran like 890s. And I think he ended up doing like a drag radial, like four little drag radials. So he got a little bit more rubber on the ground and reduced weight and broke into the eights. But no other tuning, because it's not much you can do. Not even like a gear swap or anything. It was just hauling ass in the Plaid. And to Holley's credit, they've got a line of aftermarket parts for Tesla, by the way, wheels and things like that. And they came out with a steering wheel that you could swap.
No.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You could take the yoke thing out and get one that has an actual top on it. T-Sport, I think, is the line. T-Sport is the aftermarket line that Holley Group owns. And right off the bat, you can order like three different steering wheels for that thing if you want. You swap the airbag, you put it in. So you can problem solved on the Plaid if you want to spend a couple hundred bucks on a steering wheel, which why not if you're going to spend $160,000 on the car or whatever the hell it is.
I'm sorry, but
Bill, go ahead.
Do they have a new grill for the BMW by chance?
No, and actually we talked about that. I talked about that with the guys at APR and Dine-In. And the problem is there's so much stuff packed in behind that grill. And I said, well, don't reinvent the front end. I was like, just take the big kidney grill, make it a smaller kidney grill, and then underneath it, subtly do some other type of grill just to get air in, whether it's body color or whatever. So like optically, it would look like it's a smaller grill, but the opening is still huge. Like, I don't know. You could probably just do it with paint and stickers. And they're like, actually, that's not a bad idea, because they keep trying to.
A 12-year-old can probably make a better design, to be honest.
Yeah, it's just. I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing, yeah. But
it's like, did you ever see the aftermarket do the front end for a V8 Vantage, the Aston Martin?
Yeah,
and it just looks so nice. And it was like, if you need the aftermarket, which has got, you know, X budget, to correct the design of an OEM which has got Y budget, then something's going fundamentally wrong. And I think that's the same with Tesla. You spend $160,000 on one of the richest companies, buying something from one of the richest companies in the world, and then you've got to spend $200 to, not to dismiss the aftermarket in any way. They do a great job, but there's something going wrong if you then need to go into, you need to go into your local shop and buy a steering wheel.
Oh, listen.
Yes.
Good for T-Sport. Those guys are like, oh, look, that's the ugliest steering wheel I've ever seen. We're going to make some money, right? And I know every aftermarket body company is going, Ben, BMW, they're dropping the ball in the buck-tooth grill. Let's see if we can address that. But I think they're getting ahead of themselves. They're trying to reinvent like the whole front bumper cover and extend the nose out and the whole thing. I think we can just find a way to do it with just cosmetically a different type of grill that sort of optically makes it into like an upper and lower grill. I'm guessing. I don't know. I'll have to do it.
Drove past the 4 Series the other day, and I still just cannot get over the meeting in Munich where they sat down and said, yep, that's the way forward.
And it just got past hundreds of people going, yes, 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 you know, just marketers and every finance guys, and everyone's going, I like this, you know, like it just.
But I did hear a story about the Porsche Tiptronic, and you may remember when it came out, it had really stupid. This is like going back to the 90s. It had really stupid steering wheel controls.
Yeah, the buttons.
Where you like had to use your thumb to change up, and it was a disaster. And they quickly brought in the paddles. But I heard years later that had basically been one senior exec had basically said, I want this, and just had enough political capital to just push it through. And pretty much everybody else was lined up against it.
He's now working somewhere else.
He took his $100 million payoff.
Yeah, yeah.
That was his swan song.
That's right. He got his golden parachute. He's using his flappy buttons on his way down. All right, we're running out of time here, Alistair. It's always a pleasure. We're going to have you on again soon. I'm going to head out of here and catch a plane back to Barrett Jackson. Don't worry, Bill.
I'm headed to Goldberg's garage to hang the latest, the last freaking steel beam. Man, we're going to complete this thing this week as far as hanging the steel is concerned. So
it's good. It's exciting. We saw some of the lapse videos you've been posting up on Goldberg's garage on Instagram. So love that stuff. Alistair Weaver, he's the man. Edmunds.com. He's Weaver on Cars on Instagram, and he's Alistair Weaver on Twitter. Feel free to send him a nice message.
I'm Weaver on Cars everywhere.
Are you? You
Weaver
changed
on
it?
Cars everywhere, Matt.
Weaver on Cars.
By popular demand.
Weaver on Cars. So go on to Twitter, send him a nice note. If you own a Tesla, send him a nasty note. And it's all good to go. Follow me at Moderator, of course. Goldberg's Garage. On Twitter, and Goldberg95, Goldberg's Garage on Instagram. Get the updates there, and I'll be posting some stuff from Bear Jackson. Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.